This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
1, 3, 2,
it's time to tee it high and let it fly. On the Tee, Florida.
You're playing golf and you're going to like it.
On the Champa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network. Live from the 19th Hole Studios inside Ferg's Sports Bar and Grill.
How about a brisket?
Bringing you the week's coverage of all things golf. From the PGA and LPGA to the WNCA and LIV.
We're waiting.
And now,
Your Honor,
let's tee off with two pros and a hack. PGA professionals John Rager and Bill Buttner, and your host, Mike Rickard, along with the entertainment squad, a colorful cast of characters.
You want to make $14 the hard way?
Now, everyone back up. Here's Mike Rickard.
Good afternoon and welcome to On the Tee, Florida, two pros and a hack, live from our Ice Pick Vodka, Ferg's 19th Hole Clubhouse Studios on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network. And we're 13th and Central each and every Thursday from 5 to 7. And it's a beautiful March 14th, 2024. I'm the head of the Hack Nation. Across from me is St. Petersburg's most interesting man, and that, of course, is Tom Griven. He's accomplished.
Am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
Beware the Ides of March. That's today.
That is today, isn't it? And, of course, on Sunday will be St. Paddy's Day. And this place at Ferg Sports Bar will be absolutely the largest party in downtown St. Pete by far.
Until the following Thursday and opening day.
Opening day, 3:30, first pitch.
28th.
Toronto Blue Jays down here at Ferg's. And looking forward to that. I'll be doing a three-hour show on Florida Sports Streams with Joe Bordeaux by my side. And we'll have some former MLB guys. And, yeah, we got a great show, though, right now. We got John Rager waiting for us up there at St. Augustine Beach. But back to his bio, the man of the people. I noticed that when you were down there at Katiki jamming with Tom Griben and the Saltwater Cowboys. What a great evening that was.
Yeah.
I just keep running into people that were there. And I love that annual event you do. And then, of course, the book that that neighborhood probably was involved in.
Yeah.
Of course, The Last Florida Boy. And bravo on that accomplishment as well, my friend. And of course,
appreciate it. Yes.
Author. You're the attorney for On the T4. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Well, that
since I don't practice anymore.
That news is coming around the corner. Anyway, so John Rager, how are you, my man?
Hey, doing great. Enjoying the beautiful weather and the Players Championship. Turned it on, been watching it all day with the spectacular golf that's being played right now. And it's just one of those things here in Northeast Florida that is the rite of passage of spring. When spring is around, this is the Players Championship. I'm glad that they moved it back to March years ago when they did the big shift with the tour schedules, moving all the majors around so you could accommodate the Olympics and the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup and the FedEx Championship. So it used to be played in May. Now it's back in March where it should be. And we'll talk a lot about that a little bit later in the show, as been all kinds of history made today at the Players Championship.
Well, we have someone in the house that knows quite a bit about that track, and he is Lynn Strickler, the Growler. Throw those headphones on, my man. Say hello to John Rager, and let's chat a little bit.
My favorite caddy.
Yeah, exactly. And favorite caddy for many Hall of Famers. Good to have you back on the show, my man.
How about it, John? How many Masters did you play in?
Me? None. I play on the app on EA Sports, but other than that, been to the Masters quite a bit, but have never played
the
Masters.
You were on the fringe of getting in here.
So let's,
hey,
let's,
you know,
talk about
for our listeners out there, before we get too far down the road, for our listeners out there, Lynn the Growler Strickler is one of the top 36 caddies of all time, and that's quite an honor. There's quite a few names on that list out there. But for listeners out there, this gentleman is caddy for Curtis Strange, Fred Couples, Greg Stadler, Payne Stewart, Nick Price, and Greg Norman. I can tell you right now that what a Hall of Fame cast that is. I think every one of them are in the Hall of Fame. So we can call you, Lynn, a Hall of Fame caddy. So thanks for being on the team Florida today.
But they don't call me Growler no more. I got my teeth extracted.
Yeah. And he just came in from 36 holes.
So, you did?
No.
You did.
You did.
You bet. Every hole I got is 36.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's
I can see you talk to the cart girl, right?
Love the cart girls.
So let's talk about what happened 40 years ago with you on Ben. You, of course, on Freddie Couples' bag, and what an accomplishment! Talk about that history that you have up there in Pontevedra.
Well, Freddie had never broken 80 on the course in two previous tries. 79, we came in there. He won the J.C. Penney. He won the Kemper, and shot the course record on Friday, which stood for 10 years. He shot 71, tough afternoon on Thursday. First hole, bogeys the first hole on Friday, throws the putter at the bag, goes, it tells me, that's just to show you yesterday was a fluke. He holds birdies two, holds off for eagle on four, bogeys 18 for 64, and it stood up for 10 years.
Well,
you know, Len, I enjoy watching the Players' Championship on television because they always bring some highlights back, and one of them was the Freddie Couples. Not quite sure what year it was, but he hits it in the water on 17, takes his drop, and he actually just replayed it from where he hit it, and he jars it right in the hole. Didn't take a bounce, just went straight in for a three.
Not even high-five him because that's the ugliest par I've ever seen.
Is that right?
That's what Joe, he would not high-five. Freddie's looking for a high-five. Joe goes, forget about it.
I bet. Well, you know what? Freddie was kind of a playboy, wasn't he, back in his youth, and the good-looking kid that everybody loved. He probably liked a guy like you or a LaCava to keep him focused during the round.
I was 8 years before LaCava hit the scene. This guy he did a yardage book. It was like a high-skill trigonometry. He couldn't add or subtract. I gave him every number. I walked him through there like he was Ray Charles.
After that year, did you stay on Freddie's bag? How many years were you on his? I was on
3 years.
3 years, Freddie.
We should in his top 10 in every major that year. Made 26 out of 28 cuts, and never looked back. And when he won that 10-year exemption for winning in '84, he didn't even know what that meant. He did not win another tournament for 2.5 years after. He put his game on the back burner.
What did he put on the front burner?
Wasn't his paychecks, I'll tell you right now.
But it was probably interesting with his gallery of young ladies back in the day.
It was.
Well, Mike, I don't know if you remember this, but Freddie's love life was pretty interesting, and his wife would have a few too many cocktails and start dancing on top of tables in nightclubs and things. So she was actually just as famous as he was for a while.
That's the tip of the iceberg, my friend. when she jumped his bones in Kemper, we're going up 18 to win the TBC. He tells me, make sure my wife doesn't jump me on this green. My job is to keep her away from her.
She a puppy.
Sure, you started John.
That's the truest story ever with you.
Well, I believe it. So, give us another great memory with Freddie. I mean, he's always been one of my favorites.
Okay, we have Kemper never won a tournament. I just got the bag. I had the bag for a year when I worked for him at the Masters. Never won a tournament. I told him, if you want to get paired with Mark Lye every day, you better win one quick. So we went a five-way playoff in Kemper, and he shot 77 on Sunday. It was a long, as Ben Wright says, those eggs you see out there were mere ducklings at the start of the day. Won that tournament, won the J.C. Penney in Largo. A couple months later with Jan Stevens. We won three tournaments in the first year of my job, and boy, if he had brains, he'd be dangerous. I'll put it out there.
What was the favorite bag? Was it Ben Crenshaw?
Not even. 21 days with Greg Norman.
That was your favorite bag?
Third. I made more money in 3 weeks than I did for years off these stiffs.
So when you were with Norman at the Open, right?
Squatted another one. We finished third. Could have won all three of them, and I think Chris Everett has something to do with it myself.
Oh, you flew. I think you flew over with Chris Everett.
Well, yeah. Well, he told me when he picked me up, I was caddying at the National Shinnecock in Long Island. He shows up here. I need you for 3 weeks. You fly your ass over to Birmingham, he told me, in England. I'll get your ass back to Colorado. It was a British Open in Birkdale, senior British Open at Troon, and then me and Chris and him flying over Greenland. And halfway through the flight, Chris goes, "Do you have anything but this rotgut Greg Norman wine to drink?" I went right to the bathroom.
Is that when he was hanging around with Bill Clinton?
After he broke his knee or whatever.
Yeah, he broke his knee at Greg's house.
Greg told him, he goes, "What are you doing hanging around with my little whiskey? I got five per platinum girls meeting us down here." He didn't know the sprinklers came out automatically. He did a slip slide. And how'd you earn your... Greg was giving me lessons on staying away from Monaco and whiskey.
Well, Len, so how many years did you caddy out there?
45.
45 years. That's spectacular.
After Vietnam, man, I wanted to see this country. I had a hell of a job. I found the opportunity to do it properly. Every tournament was a Dean Martin, Bing Crosby, Bob Hope. It wasn't about the money. It was about seeing the country.
Did you hit any balls over in Nam?
Yeah, but there are Benoit balls.
Okay.
Hey, so Len, when you got involved with caddying,
three guys on a car, everybody's got to flip. There's three guys in a 2-bedroom place. They're flipping their coins. If you're the odd man, you're dug on the rug. You want to miss that flip. If you're an odd man out, here's a pillow and a sheet. I'll see you in the morning. Dug on the rug.
That's Nam for you.
That is no, it ain't Nam for me. It's a U.S. stinking A. Every goddamn, every dump between Jacksonville and Los Angeles. A guy, a heavy hitter like you would know nothing about it.
Hey, I do want to ask you a personal question regarding baseball. Apparently, you still love the game. You go to Rays games, you go to the minor league games. And you played at Clearwater High, is that right?
And American Legion. I was all county. I got the bad draft number 3.
That's what I was telling Tom. I said, you probably would have made it into minor leagues and continued.
I got tryouts from the Phillies and the Orioles. I got the bad draft number.
You got the,
my batting average and my grade point average is the same, 212. Number 3, I was doing push-up and 4 jacket about a week later.
Well, you survived it. God bless you, and thank you.
That
for
That made me a good caddy. I call it the 18-hole minesweep.
Well, I
hey, Len, you know, there's something fascinating about your career, especially the caddies of your era, is the fact that, you know, nowadays to become a caddy on the PGA Tour, you know, it's just a totally different deal. The money's different and the people getting involved are different. Money. How in the world did you get involved with caddying, and how did you make it to where you could be a PGA Tour caddy?
Clearwater High School. I was doing dishes in Santa Barbara, even his second to Weisskopf in Philly, IVB, made $17,000. I go, this is going to beat washing dishes. I called him. I go, where's the next tournament? You just got a new caddy. And that was it.
And that was your buddy?
That's it.
That was your buddy from Clearwater High?
Played softball. He won the state. The only state championship of Clearwater ever won was Clearwater High School golf team in 67.
Did you play on that team?
You could either play baseball or golf. I had to be a baseball player.
And when you didn't pick up golf until you started caddying?
After I got out of the man, I couldn't afford golf.
Well, you're a pretty decent stick these days. He's been playing with the Phillies all week.
I like balls that are moving, not balls sitting still.
Well, you
dug on the rug.
I sit on the fastball here.
You've been golfing with the Phillies, some of the alumni.
Yeah, well, John Kruk's brother, Joe Kruk, his title is the spring training golf director for the Phillies.
That's his title?
They're staying at the Sand Pearl free, and he gets places to play.
Crookie does that?
Joe Kruk, John Kruk's brother.
Gotcha. Okay.
And if there's any openings, I'd be filling in. Yeah.
And Mike Schmidt plays? Luzinski?
No, Schmidt didn't. And a lot of them are so Mickey Morandini, Miguel Cat, all kinds of fillers. I cannot recognize them. But they got me out there to tell stories and told them how to cheat properly.
All right, my friend. Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your day. Tell people how busy the courses are these days.
Well, I'm playing the Copperhead on Saturday because the Phillies got it wrapped up. They're giving everyone a 9x9 piece of AstroTurf so they won't chunk divots on the middle of the fairway, and the rough is 9 inches tall.
I can't believe that they actually rented it out this close to the Valspar.
It's about Philly money, my friend.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. But you try to go out golfing today, and they're all just completely packed right now. That's the reality of golf down here now. Oh, yeah, unbelievable.
I play the first hole before the sun comes up. By the ninth hole, I'm out.
All right, my man. Well, thank you very much for coming
down.
It's
a pleasure to be on, and I hope your audience enjoyed the show.
Yeah, well, you know, if we were on our streaming channel, we could really rock and roll. And he is...
Adios.
I'm not calling you the growler anymore. He's Lynn Strickler, and he's a Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame caddy. He's got stories.
I got stories, Mike.
He had a column in Sports Illustrated in the 80s, a weekly segment on Sports Illustrated, and I've read those columns as well. All right, my man. That's too small for you. I'll get you another one. All right.
I hope they heard that.
They did. Anyway.
He's been saying that for 2 years.
Yeah. Let's take our early break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk. We're going to continue talking caddies. Of course, we were with them last week, Ward Clayton, the legendary caddies of
the
Augusta National.
Name 18-hole minesweep.
You need to write your own book.
It's written. Jaime Diaz on it.
We'll take a break. We'll be back on the Tee Florida live from the Ferg's 19th hole, Ice Pick Clubhouse Studios.
Yeah, that was good.
18 holes never felt so good. We're on the tee from the 19th hole studios at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill on the Champa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network.
On the Tee Florida, Florida's fastest growing premier golf and entertainment show has now moved to Thursday nights from 5 to 7, providing more golf entertainment and inside information from PGA to LPGA, LIV, NCAA, high school, and local events. A show for scratch golfers and fun-loving hacks. Two pros, John Rieger and Bill Butner, sharing PGA Golf Tour insights and tips, along with the hack Mike Rickard, head of the Hack Nation, inserting Caddyshack humor with our talented entertainment team of Kerry McNally, Tom Gibran, and Ice Pick Vodka Cocktail Queen and Cart Girl, the talented Patty Suzette. Tune in to On the Tee Florida, Thursdays from 5 to 7 from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill 19th Hole Clubhouse and Ice Pick Vodka Studios for a chance to win golf passes, swag, Rays Bucks Rowdies tickets, and Ferg's Full Swing Simulator passes. That's On the Tee Florida on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network, streaming on Florida Sports Stream and RadioSt.Pete.com. Tee it high and let it fly with On the Tee Florida and Ice Pick Vodka.
What does Sea Dog Brewing and Shipyard Tampa Bay Tailgate have in common? Both are world-class experiences, owned by the same people. What a great place to spend some time with friends this holiday season. The place to be is Sea Dog Treasure Island, 9610 Gulf Boulevard. Why Sea Dog, you ask? Well, it's locally owned with locally produced brew right here in Florida. It's also a place for fun, food, and drink on the coastal Blind Pass waterfront. Ice Pick draft drinks, Sea Dog Blue Paw, and a Mug Club rewards program. Get all this to go with a family-owned breakfast experience with homemade biscuits and more. Open 8 a.m. to late night. Check it out at treasure.seadogbrewing.com. While there, enter to win Tampa Bay tailgate tickets near Ray J for Bucks home games. Sea Dog Brewing, Treasure Island. It's where Tampa Bay family and friends go to enjoy life from breakfast to late night. 9610 Gulf Boulevard, Shipyard, Sea Dog Brewing. Check it out at treasure.seadogbrewing.com.
We're on to the next hole. And on the tee from the 19th Hole Studios at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill on the Tampa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network.
Welcome back. I'm Mike Rickard, head of the Hack Nation, sitting across from Tom Gribben and John Rager.
John, we needed a drink after that one with
St.
the growler.
Augustine Beach. Yeah.
And John tried to keep him reeled in. Well, but he kept on getting off the hook.
Well, we love the growler, and I think
if this was a fishing show, I certainly would have kept him reeled in. But this is a golf show, and it's not hard for us all to get out of bounds once in a while.
I'm trying to, and you tried. We were security, but interesting stories. And he certainly, if we were just on Florida Sports Streams, and we weren't on our terrestrial stations, we could have rock and roll for a couple hours with some of his stories.
He's very entertaining, but it was really entertaining, John, to have you trying to keep him in bounds. That was fun for me. You're a real pro, buddy.
Yeah. And I appreciate you firing those questions at him, my man, because then he'd get a perplexed look on his face, and then he'd have to try to respond the way that you wanted, and we get a partial answer.
Right, instead of go off, he had to respond to John.
Two-thirds of our show tonight is about caddies, so I can't wait. Is our next guest ready? Is he going to pot him up? Is he ready to go?
Oh, he'll be on about 5:35.
We're a little advanced for that. Okay, well, that's great. I really enjoyed meeting Ward Clayton.
I wanted to get the growler on as soon as possible. Let's talk players. There's players championship right now. Let's pull that leaderboard up. Brought to you by our good friends at Ice Pick Vodka, Sea Dogs Brewing, and Shipyard Brewing. And of course, I've been watching it since about 9 a.m. The coverage on the Golf Channel, and gorgeous day. And Growler said, you know, and he's right, you know, he should know. He said the guys that got out early today and then start late tomorrow will be the guys that you see on the leaderboard, more than all of them, more than likely.
This is special players because it's the 50th anniversary, and Jack Nicklaus won the first Players' Championship in 1974. And so he was there on hand, actually, to mingle and greet the past champions on the first tee as they're teeing off. So
that was
an excellent, cool deal. There's all kinds of storylines this week. We'll talk a little bit about later in the show on the John Rager report about the commissioner's press conference that he has every year. Yeah. But from a golf standpoint today, there was something really spectacular that happened. Ryan Fox, who's from New Zealand, made a hole in one on the Island Green at the Players' Championship, 17th hole. And
he made an eagle right before it.
That's correct. And it's the very first time that's ever happened at the Players' Championship where somebody made eagle one. And then you know, as you follow him along, I'm like, wow, this is going to be a great finish. Just like Craig Perks from years past, who chipped it in three times in a row on the way down, and you know, or chipped it in on 16, birdied 17, chipped it in on 18. Well, Ryan went ahead and bogeyed 18, so kind of lost some O there. But congratulations to Ryan Fox. In fact, there's not that many hole-in-ones have been made. Before the World Golf Hall of Fame moved back to Pinehurst last year, I went and took one final visit. They have this display at the World Golf Hall of Fame. It's the 17th hole, and they have a list of all the touring pros that made hole-in-one there, and there's not many. There can't be more than 15 or 16 hole-in-ones that have been made there throughout the 50 years history of the Players' Championship. Of course, at TPC Sawgrass, it was first played in 1982, and for our listeners out there, they may remember this because they replay this all the time. Jerry Pate won the inaugural Players' Championship at that golf course, and then and he threw Dean Beaman, who was the commissioner of the PGA Tour at the time, into the water, threw Pete Dye into the water, and then Jerry Pate dove into the water himself because it was such an unusual golf course. But look where this tournament's evolved to, where, you know, it can be, you know, it's not going to be the fifth major golf because you don't really have all the world's top players at that tournament. You know, you don't have European Tour players, you don't have the LIV golfers, but it's close to the fifth major. It's that kind of caliber, and what a jewel for us here in Northeast Florida to look forward to that every year.
Let's go back to Jack Nicklaus, and you know, I know that you are a fan of his, Tom, and of course we grew up in that era. He's 84 years young, I'm going to say that, because when he sat down at the desk today with the Golf Channel guys, it just impressed me how sharp he still is. he was able to roll, you know, as they threw a question here then, and then he'd elaborate with more detail that was relative to his generation when he was playing, and knowing what the young guys are doing today, which was very impressive, and he's my hero at 84. I hope I have half his gray matter, and I'm not just sitting there slobbering, hold on to this microphone. You guys will probably yank it out of my hands if that doesn't happen next week.
No, he is impressive at his age. You know, when I've talked to him, you know, face to face, he's sharp. And I'll tell you what, you get more respect, John, if you go grab his clubs from the 70 and go try and play around with those clubs.
Oh, yeah, compared to today's equipment?
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you that. When my first staff deal that I signed when I turned pro back in the late 70s was McGregor. So, you know, because Jack Nicklaus was the big McGregor guy. So, you know, we all wanted to have the same clubs that Jack played, you know. And I still have that set in my garage. And it's the blades are very thin. The woods are persimmon. The shafts are steel. So there's a tremendous amount of respect I have for those players of that yesteryear where they're, you know, Jack would hit the ball 300 yards off the tee. Nowadays, you know, that would be a weak driving average on the PGA Tour, but look at the technology.
Oh, and those clubs, yeah, exactly. Go hit that two iron, John. Go hit that McGregor two iron when you're done with this set here.
Well, they were asking Jack on one of the particular holes, you know, when he won in 74 and what club he used, and he says, which you don't hear this anymore either. He said, I always used a one iron, you know, and you don't hear guys using one irons any longer. Do they even make one irons anymore, John?
You can get a one iron, but it's a custom order. You know, they'll make some one irons out there, but it's a custom order. They actually call them driving irons now. Okay.
Yeah.
Lee Trevino said, even God can't hit a one iron.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, one of the funny things about Jack Nicklaus, and he said this years ago, he's 84, but I think when he turned 70, he had his annual State of the Fair press conference where he would talk about his businesses and his golf courses design and his everything else. And at the end of the press conference, somebody asked him, Mr. Nicklaus, how's your golf game? And Jack responded, he goes, at age 70, he goes, well, all my life, everybody's wanted to play golf just like me. Now they can.
Yeah, I remember that. Hey, let's go over that leaderboard before we transition to conversation with Ward Clayton. And of course, he was very, very gracious to us last week up there at Feather Sound. Brought to you by our friends at Ice Pick Vodka. Xander Schauffele on top with Rory McIlroy. They're both sitting at 7 under. Nick Taylor 6 under. Tom Hoge 5. Jason Day 5 under. And let's see. Where is Scotty Scheffler sitting right now? Oh, Scotty Scheffler's sitting at 4 under. He's the reigning champion. Of course, last weekend, what a recovery for Scotty from day one to the finish. There's a great possibility he's the favorite in this to repeat. But nice start by Rory today as well.
Hey, Mike, a quick note there on Rory McIlroy. McIlroy double bogeyed the seventh hole today. And then on 18, he dumps it in the water. So, you know, he added 3 extra shots to his score today. You know, he could have come in there with a 62. I mean, so he's playing very, very well. And you know, he's the 2019 Players' Championship, champion. So at that particular point, he's comfortable with the golf course. And I think this particular golf course makes him keep his driver under control. You know, you have to hit it a long way, but there's certain holes you just got to get in the fairway. And I think he's more focused on driving accuracy. Even though he's the number one driver on the PGA Tour, it's been his iron play this year that's kind of set him back. You know, he might be like 80th or something in approach shots into the green. So if Rory can hold it together, he just might walk away with this thing.
You know, now all the prognosticators, even the Golf Channel now has a odds maker. And it's almost like the Super Bowl. All of these prop bets that you can make. And the number on 17 of balls in the water as over and under, what would you think it would be, John?
Oh, 17 for the whole field?
For the whole field, for the whole 4 days.
Oh, for the whole field, for the whole 4 days? Well, I would go, I would have to say there's got to be 30 balls in the water in 4 days.
The number is 52 for the over and under.
Oh, my goodness. That is 52. Really something.
That's wild. All right. Well, let's shift gears. Time flies when you're having fun on the tee, Florida, and we're blessed. John Rager, myself, and Bill Butner, the North Carolina Tar Heel. We were welcomed by another North Carolina Tar Heel, and of course, Ward Clayton. Thank you very much, my friend, for taking very good care of us last week, and that food was marvelous up there at Feather Sound. That we sat down and had a nice meal. So first things first, I just wanted to get that out of the way. Thank you very much for taking care of us last week. That was a lot of fun.
The fastest way to make friends, Mike, is to keep everybody fed.
Yeah, you're right, and that was a nice spread. I felt bad that we were the last ones there, but then you saw that the entire staff got to finish part of the buffet too, so I felt good about it. So, as we're sitting there having a conversation, just out of the blue, you break to John and I that you've been involved with the Masters for, is it 22 years?
This will be the 40th year I've been there.
Oh, excuse me. I was only 18 years off.
Hey, you know, for our listeners out there, let's just introduce Ward Clayton. You know, Ward is a very interesting person. And I discovered a few things as I read his bio. One of the things that, Ward, you grew up at Hillendale Golf Course in Durham, North Carolina. And I have a friend of mine that's a director of golf named Carl Kimball
that.
And Carl's just a wonderful guy and does a great deal every year when they have when they honor veterans and things like that. And but I know that we were sitting at dinner the other night and we were talking about your background, and you told us that you were the sports editor of the Augusta Chronicle, and I just kind of blurped out that every time I've gone to the Masters I always get a copy of that, I'm reading about it. And I said, man, this newspaper covers golf just like no other when it comes to it. And sure enough, I looked at your bio on Blair.com there, looking at your book, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. And Golf World Magazine said that best coverage of a golf tournament of any newspaper in the world has been the Augusta Chronicle. So, Ward, you got a lot going for you there, but I know that you've got extensive background working for the PGA Tour and the Masters. So welcome to On the Tee Florida, and we understand you have a book that's coming out, and we'd just love to talk about it. We just had a very colorful caddy on before you, Lynn Strickland, Lynn the Growler Strickland. So we're looking forward to talking more about caddies this tournament.
Awesome. Thanks, you guys, for having me. Yeah, 20 years ago, I wrote a book called Men on the Bag, which sort of revealed who some of these caddies were at Augusta National and the All Black Caddy Corps up until 1983. And it turned into a documentary with Bill Murray as a narrator in 2019. You may have seen it on the Golf Channel, called Loopers, A Caddy's Long Walk. And this book is out of print, and so it needed substantial updating. It needed some additions, and so we're republishing it without mail. And I just think these guys went way beyond as far as their caddying skills were concerned, and also some of the boundaries they had to get around in order just to get to their workplace was pretty remarkable.
Well, Ward, this book is something that is probably, I would call it, necessary reading for anybody that's a student of the game or a fan of the game of golf, because this is part of history that you captured. It's a very colorful history with the Masters and the characters that are involved on it. And I really got a kick out of looking at the foreword about your book that's coming out here on advertising it. In fact, I saw that you can start buying this book on April 2nd, it says. But looking at some of the names of some of these caddies: Stovepipe, Burnt Biscuit, Skillet, Skinny, and Marble Eye. I mean, how in the world did some of these nicknames come about?
My favorite one is Cemetery. Willie Purcheek. Willie Purcheek was President Eisenhower's caddy in the late 40s and through the 50s. He got the nickname because one night he was playing drums at a jazz club in Augusta, and a couple weeks before, he'd taken this liking to this young lady, and she liked him even more, and he said, well, I've had enough of this. And so he said he wasn't going to go out with her anymore, so she got some of her friends, went to the club that night when he finished playing. They jumped him behind the bar and took a knife to him, and they took him to the hospital and thought he was dead. So they sent him to the morgue, And the mortician's checking all the bodies in the morgue, and lo and behold, Cemetery wakes up and scares the mortician half to death, and therefore he gets the nickname Cemetery.
he was President Dwight D. Eisenhower's caddy?
Yes, yes. And so he had a particularly important position because Eisenhower spent up to 50 days going to Augusta and playing golf as the sitting president of the United States. And so he was probably right at the elbow length with Eisenhower when they were discussing international politics. There were undercover officers walking on the golf course with machine guns and golf bags. So it was really, he was sort of right at the edge of what happened or whatever Eisenhower did. And I don't know if you guys know the story, but Eisenhower wanted Ike's tree on 17, which is the big tree that used to stand in front of the 17th tee. He wanted it torn down because he had a slice, and every time he teed off on that hole of the left-hand side, he hit his tee shot into the tree. And so Clifford Roberts, who was the chairman of the club, adjourned a meeting when he brought that up and said, we're not going to have any more topics today because that tree stayed. Lo and behold, 10 years ago, there was an ice storm in Augusta, and the tree lost most of its limb. They had to take it down anyway. So it was probably Eisenhower from up above getting them back. So, so the cemetery was his caddy for ever and ever, and watched his golf game and interacted with him, and probably just as close as anybody to him on the golf course, which is what you find in a lot of caddies. They're really close to players because they know everything.
Well, Eisenhower...
So the book is The Legendary Caddies of Augusta National, and you can find it on Blair Publications, blairpub.com, releasing on April 2nd. When did you realize that you were actually just going to write a book about all this? How did this come about when you decided that, you know, I'm going to write a book about this?
John, in the Augusta Chronicle, we did so much historical stuff on the Masters Tournament back from 91 to 2000 when I was a sports editor. And we'd always run into stories that would, if they mentioned the caddy, it was just by his nickname. For example, Stovepipe, for example, Iron Man, or caddy for Arnold Palmer. And so I was sort of struck by, you know, these guys play such a big role. Who were these people really? You know, what were their real names? Where did they come from, et cetera, like that? And finally, in 99, a lady named Vanessa Peterson Fox called us at the newspaper office and said, my dad, Willie Peterson, has died in New York. And Willie Peterson caddied for the first five of Jack Nicklaus's Masters wins. So that led me to believe, hey, this story needs to be told. That, you know, we got to tell who Billy Peterson is, where he came from, his background. Same with Iron Man, who's Nathaniel Avery. There was so many stories about these guys, about how they played such a key role in winning the Masters Tournament, whether it was like Jeriah Beard, who caddied for Fuzzy in 79 when he won. Jeriah guided Fuzzy around the whole golf course. Fuzzy didn't know the golf course, didn't play much practice rounds, and Jeriah was like his seeing eye dog for a blind person. All the way to somebody like Walter Pritchett in 1971 with Charlie Coody won. Charlie Coody's in the eighth fairway on Saturday of the third round. Nicklaus and Miller are right behind him. And his caddy, Cricket, says to him, what time does TV start today, Mr. Coody? And Charlie Coody says, well, why are you worried about that? He says, well, you know, I drive a bus in Atlanta, and I told my boss that I was going to visit my sick grandmother in Texas, and I didn't think he was going to play this well. And so when they got to the back nine every day of that 1971 Masters, on the 11th hole, which is where TV started in those days, Cricket would go off to the side and take the towel off the golf bag, put it over his head, take the cap and put it over the towel and try to hide from his boss on CBS during the final two rounds. So
that is absolutely priceless to hear that. That is so cool.
In effect, what happened is Charlie Cootie couldn't be so nervous about Miller and Nicklaus chasing him down when he's sitting there laughing at his caddy the entire back nine. So it took a lot of the tension out of the back nine of Augusta, which, you know, a lot of guys, when they get tense on that back nine, the water sort of finds their ball pretty quickly. So, you know, you could have guys who are clubbing guys or reach butts all the way to being humorous and taking your mind off the stress. So that you get the whole gamut of those guys doing that.
We know, Ward, one of the things about your book, and I kind of caught this, and it made me think of a question I wanted to ask you. So you're talking about your book, talking about these caddies who were, you know, were caddies from the shot heard around the world from Gene Sursen. Was it 1935 where he made double eagle on an amen corner to Jack Nicklaus, winning a record five of his six Masters, which means that somewhere around that time, and maybe you can answer this question for our listeners out there, that there was a time when you were required to use the caddy from Augusta, and then there was a time where it changed where you didn't have to use a caddy and you could use your regular tour caddies. When did that come about?
Until the mid-70s, all four majors required that you use a caddy at the club that was hosting the event. So the PGA Championship goes a different spot every year. U.S. Open goes a different spot. The British Open goes a different spot. So they would have a whole different host of caddies every year. And Augusta always had the same guys usually caddying for them. So they became famous as a core at Augusta. So eventually, caddying became a little bit more of a business. And by the late 70s, Open Championship, U.S. Open, PGA, all allowed outside caddies, so your regular caddy could go work for you there. But Augusta kept the local all-black caddy corps until 1983 because they were so honored to have these guys caddy for, who were basically local guys caddying there. So by 1983, the caddies on the PGA Tour and players had gotten up in arms, and they wanted to bring their own guys. And so they broke that barrier in 1983.
You know, when they started bringing their own caddies, was there any kind of transition for these poor guys that had done it for decades? Were there other events? Was there anywhere for them to go at that time, Ward?
They lost a lot of their opportunity to make a humongous paycheck, you know, and so they still had the opportunity to caddy for members who generally are pretty high up in the business world or whatever as members of Augusta National. But they lost this one-week opportunity to really become famous and make a humongous payday. So they didn't have anywhere else to go, really. So unfortunately, but there are examples like Ben Crenshaw, who became Carl Jackson's his caddy, won in 84 and 95. Carl knew the golf course inside and out. So that they had an advantage over some of these guys who just come in once a year. So Carl would know the changes in the golf course from one year to the next. He knew some of the shots that you only could figure out by being there so much. So, you know, that was a real reason that Crenshaw won, and plus Carl was a great swing reader. You know, Crenshaw was a terrific putter. So that, you know, a lot of times if you watch those Masters, he and Carl were like the best of friends. He wasn't necessarily just a caddy. They were real pals.
You're listening
to Ward at Augusta National. Oh, go ahead there. Go ahead there, Mike.
On the T, Florida, we're live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, 19th Hole Clubhouse Studios, right down here in St. Petersburg, across from Tropicana Field, brought to you by our good friends at Ice Pick Vodka, Michelob Ultra, Sea Dogs Brewing, and, of course, their nice craft beer, Shipyard Brewing. We're having a conversation with Ward Clayton. He is the author of the legendary Caddies of Augusta National, and it'll be out on April 3rd. I do want you to share with our audience a little bit more elaborately of your role in the Masters every year at this stage.
I work for Masters.com. We cover the tournament pretty extensively. Got a lot of people there that help you guide your way along the Masters, whether it be stories, video, live scoring, something we did a couple years ago, which I think was a real breakthrough. For example, if you got, hypothetically, if you got an amateur who's playing in the Masters, if you don't see him on TV, you can go to Masters.com and follow that player and watch every shot he hits. I think that's pretty pretty cool that, you know, if you want to watch the guy play the tournament, you can go to our website and follow him along, which, you know, that's unprecedented to have that technology to be able to do that. I think that's the coolest thing we do amongst a lot of cool things.
You know, Ward, I tell you what, I absolutely love the app. I download it, Masters.com, the whole deal. And sometimes I find myself, when I watch the Masters every year, I'm on the app and I realize, oh, I should be watching on television now, I guess. And I'm still on the app. It's that good. And in fact, the Masters has always been an innovator in everything when it comes to televising and reporting and even in the scoreboards. I remember a time where the scoreboards changed to reflect how many under you are on a hole. I remember scoreboards used to be that you had to put, you know, they kept track of under par and over par in a hole, and then they started actually using scores and things like that. But it got to a point that I think that the Masters, what I'm trying to say, has just been in the forefront of every major technological and tournament operational innovation.
That's a good point, John. I think it's a combination of two things that is cool in that aspect. Yes, the over-under par scoring, they started that at tournaments. But you also get the old-school feel of the manual scoreboards there, much like you would at Fenway Park with the scoreboard in left field. So you do get the technology updates with the under-par scoring. But at the same time, there it is. You know, you've got the drama of when the flacker goes down for one particular player on the score in a hole, you're waiting for that score to appear. And you don't have your cell phone to look at there because they don't allow you to have your cell phone on site. So all of a sudden, you're talking to the person next to you, and you're anticipating the score changing on the scoreboard in front of you. I think that's really a cool thing where you can go there and watch the tournament and aren't stuck with your face in a phone. You're watching the golf tournament itself.
Oh, yeah, that is so true. I mean, I've had the good fortune of being able to attend the Masters numerous times, and that is actually true. You know, where all of a sudden the placard comes down and the crowd starts murmuring. You hear a murmur, and then whatever the score goes up, if it turns out it's going to be they made a double bogey, you hear the thousands of people. But if they have a birdie, all of a sudden you hear people cheering the scoreboard. It's that exciting.
Exactly. You go inside, there's a couple of those big scoreboards there that I've been up inside during the tournament. It's definitely like being at Fenway Park, where you sit inside on the back of each of these placards. When a player's name goes there, they can chalk and written the guy's name on the back so they can see what's on the back, but they can't see the front of it. So there's really a lot of precision that goes on there. It's pretty neat.
Well, you know, you guys have actually thought about everything. Even when you're up at the Masters, if you're standing in line for the restroom, there's somebody holding a sign up that says, it's only 3 minutes from this spot, you know, just to make sure you don't get out of line.
Exactly.
Hey, I wanted to correct you. You're putting all the love on that old-time stadium. I work for the Cubs organization. Wrigley's got the same thing, brother, right there.
Yeah,
one of the greatest
places
in America to watch baseball.
You're right. Great hot dogs. Sort of the same time period, you know, and I think keeping that old school feel to it really brings a lot of flavor to the event if you're there. Really neat.
Speaking of flavor, your buddy Bill Butner, your former Tar Heel teammate, just sent me a picture of a cooler. Must be at the St. Pete Country Club to tell you hello, and the cooler has on the side of it 9 and wine and a flamingo. That's where your Tar Heel buddy is. You guys probably could have shared the Tar Heels. I'm assuming they beat the Seminoles of Florida State today. Am I correct?
They did. Yeah. Today I'm in Pinehurst, North Carolina. And so for you guys, you know, I'll include Tampa in the Southeast in this regard. Starting this spring, in April, the Masters in Augusta, and in June, the U.S. Opens at Pinehurst. So anybody that lives in this part of the country where you guys are and up through Georgia and South Carolina and North Carolina, you know, you're going to see major championship golf right in your backyard. That's really really cool. I grew up going to Pinehurst and playing some golf, and I'm here today doing a couple things, but Pinehurst Resort's going to be fun to see the U.S. Open when it comes there in June, too.
You're Pinehurst right now?
Yes.
Hey, Ward, you know, I know the caddy is actually a famous logo for Pinehurst, yep. Number two,
putter
I
boy.
Believe. So,
putter boy. The putter boy.
So yeah. One of the questions I had for you is, the story of an all-black Augusta National caddy corps, the most famous caddy group in the game's history. Well, these were professionals. These are professional caddies, okay? And so what's the future hold for the caddies at Augusta National now? Because they still have caddies, obviously. You can't take a golf cart out there, so... what's the future hold for the caddies? Is there any legacies there? Is there anything that is in the community? Is the people that work at caddies at Augusta National? Where's that heading?
You got two minutes there, Ward.
I'll give you a little background real quick. Caddy Master Enterprises, which is based in Jacksonville Beach, runs all the caddy programs at Augusta, Pinehurst, Pebble Beach. So they oversee the caddy programs. The caddy lineage at Augusta still exists. The Augusta National Women's Amateur 5 years ago, Jennifer Kupcho was one shot behind on the eighth hole. She got a migraine headache. She went to her caddy, Brian McKinley, who's an Augusta National caddy, and told him she could not see out of one eye. So Brian searched up a Coca-Cola and her migraine medication, guided her through the ninth and the tenth holes. She regained her faculties on the 11th hole. Finished, I think she birdied four of the last five holes and won the tournament, and she attributed a lot of what she did to him keeping her in the game when she was having this migraine which she couldn't see. So that caddy legacy still lives on in that way.
That's a great story. And, of course, the story lives in with this new book that will be out, the Legendary Caddies of Augusta National by Ward Clayton, Inside Stories from Golf's Greatest Stage. How do people get those orders in? I see we've got a card right here with a code that you can do your pre-orders. But where do they go to get this great book? I think I'm going to get a couple of them.
I would suggest you go to Blair, B-L-A-I-R, pub.com, blairpub.com. That's not a local beer establishment or a sponsor of your show. So you can go there, or you can go to your local independent bookseller and get it. I would suggest in this world now where you order everything online, just go to blairpub.com. That's the easiest and quickest way to get it.
Well, Ward Clayton, thank you very much. We'll get a hold of you. I know you're going to be busy. We'll try to squeeze 5-10 minutes out of you before the Masters. Got a deal there?
Yes, sir. I'd love to. That'd be great. Just let me know.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll tell your buddy Bill Butner you said hello, and he's wining and dining. Have a great weekend.
All right. Thank you, guys. Take care. Have a good rest of the week.
Thank you very much. Interesting conversation there, Tom Gribben, and that book. I'm certainly want to get a copy of it.
Yeah.
That guy is very well rounded, isn't he, John Rager?
Well, he's like Tom Gribben. I mean, we're in rarefied air. We have famous authors, two of them on our show, Ward Clayton and Tom Gribben. So, I'm not sure how we can, top that.
Well, I'm never going to top you guys.
This story in the book.
Oh, I watched a documentary, Loopers. We'll be back at hour number two on the 50th championship weekend, and we'll talk a little of that, and then we'll have Kerry McNally talking about next week when we're up at the Valis Bar. We'll be back. Up studios on the T Florida.